Well, I know it's Wednesday, but it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday right here on the Line of Fire. Ready to dive in?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I don't want to upset your sense of equilibrium in terms of days of the week, because it is Wednesday, but here it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That's because we'll be airing a different program tomorrow for Thanksgiving, but today it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Well, we may do Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Thanksgiving as well, but it won't be live taking your call. So this is the day to do it. Anything having to do with Israel, having to do with the Jewish people, having to do with the Hebrew Bible, having to do with the Jewish religion, anything. Ah, tomorrow we're going to air an interview with Professor Craig Keener. What a great thing to do for Thanksgiving. Super. But today we're going to do Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Wednesday. So anything you want to call me about, discuss, having anything to do with Israel and the Jewish people, 866-34-TRUTH. It could be a focused Old Testament question. We'll even take those today. I posted an image on Twitter earlier, and it's going to go out on Facebook later today. And it's a famous civil rights picture. It shows in the picture civil rights leaders from the last generation. It shows leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King. It is primarily black leaders marching, but marching side by side with them are other leaders who are Jewish. Famous picture of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, one of the greatest Jewish thinkers of the 20th century and a professor at Jewish Theological Seminary. He is marching in a famous picture, arm in arm with Dr. King. Here, Dr. Heschel is in the picture, but also there are other Jewish leaders, one of whom is carrying a Torah scroll. And it reminds us of the day when blacks and Jews joined together in the civil rights movement. Now you'll have some radical liberal Jew and some radical liberal black, and they'll be working together, in my view, for many purposes that are not in the best interest of the country or in the best interest of the African-American community. But here you had something very different and something I wanted to stir hearts with, and I mention it to you on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I want to give you some insights from the book of Job as I spend most of my academic writing time dealing with Job as I'm seeking to get my commentary finished by next September. I want to give you some Hebrew insights from Job. And if I say this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, you just understand it's a Wednesday, all right? It's a Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Wednesday, or Thoroughly Jewish Wednesday version of Thursday. But check this out, Times of Israel headline, ADL, that's the Anti-Defamation League, slams Hagee for calling Obama anti-Semitic. Isn't that interesting? Jewish rights group called Christian leaders' comments offensive and misplaced, and a denigration and distortion of the term. Ah, that's it. It's not so much that they're defending the president as that they feel it's a misuse of the term. The Anti-Defamation League slammed the founder of Christian Center for Israel Monday for calling U.S. President Barack Obama anti-Semitic. According to Abraham Foxman, the national director of the ADL, Pastor John Hagee's remarks about President Obama were offensive and misplaced. One can agree to disagree about the president and his administration's record in dealing with Israel, but to apply the label of anti-Semitic is a serious denigration and distortion of the term. Hagee made his remarks on Sunday at the annual dinner in New York of the Zionist Organization of America. Hagee also said that Obama was, quote, trying to break the U.S.-Israel relationship. And countering that, Abe Foxman said the president continues to be a staunch ally and friend of Israel and friend of the Jewish community. I would say the truth is somewhere in between those two statements. True friend of Israel, staunch ally of Israel, and anti-Semitic. I'd say the truth is in between those. All right, we'll be right back.
Change the world.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You're thinking to yourself, wait, that's Thursday music. That sounds like it's from the Middle East. That sounds like it's Thirdly Jewish Thursday. Well, it is, but it's Wednesday. Michael Brown here at Live, as in L-I-V-E, Live. Oh, and looking at the clock, one of my favorite dates of the year, 11/26, because that immediately reminds me of Romans 11/26 and the promise that all Israel will be saved, a promise in context which must mean a national turning. The Israel that is hardened now is the Israel that will turn at the end of the age. It does not speak of the combined remnant of Jewish believers through the ages. It absolutely does not speak of Jew and Gentile coming together as one in the church, in the ecclesia there. Oh, certainly saved Israel, saved Gentiles. Those are part of the ecclesia. They make up the ecclesia, the messianic congregation, the church. That's not what Paul's speaking of there, Romans 11:26. All right. Look, I know we could carry on the conversation about Ferguson for another day very, very easily. We had wonderful, constructive, insightful calls, insightful as in S-I-G-H-T, not C-I-T-E. Wonderfully insightful calls, great discussion for two solid hours yesterday. If you missed the broadcast, by all means, go to AskDrBrown.org and click on Latest Broadcast. And then we plan to excerpt some of the key calls and put them out online so that you can listen to the audio of just some select calls. A great, great input from you, our listeners. Thank you so much. If you didn't read my article about Ferguson must be redeemed, in other words, how to have a constructive, redemptive approach to the events in Ferguson, please read my article by clicking on latest article. And I'll probably write more about that and where I do see race baiting in America and how dangerous and destructive that obviously is. But today we're switching topics. Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Wednesday because of this being Thanksgiving week. I want to give you some Hebrew insights in a moment. And again, any Jewish-related question, Hebrew-related question, theology that ties in with Israel, prophecy-related, what's happening in the world, Israel, Islam, this is a great day to call, 866-348-7884. Before I do that, though, this was posted last month on Memory TV. This is the Middle East Media Research Institute. And October 22nd, this is a British radical Islamic leader, Abu Bara'a. He is supporting the beheadings, the horrific beheadings that ISIS has been carrying out. And he's explaining that an adult unbeliever, in other words, a non-Muslim, even if that person comes over to help do humanitarian work, that person, he claims, is considered a combatant. So, Joey, I want to play a few clips beginning at number 8. And this is what, these are some chilling words, but I want you to hear them. Here's what he had to say.
The topic is the recent kidnapping and death of Mr. Alan Henning, who went to Syria as an aid worker. In Islam, a combatant is any adult, mature, capable, kafir man. He is called a combatant.
There it is. Now, you might say, well, other Muslims differ. I understand. I'm just saying that he is justifying these things, not just being killed in war, but taking someone as a prisoner who is there simply to do humanitarian work and then, in cold blood, beheading the person. He continues to explain his viewpoints here.
The original rules are any kafir, mature, capable man, if he has no covenant of security with the Muslims, then he is called a combatant, muqatil, fighter. Okay? It's not about did he fight, it's about is he capable to fight. Okay, that is, you know, we saw this in many of the evidence from the Quran and Sunnah. Ibn Qayyim, he mentioned it as well. And even the topic of he's just a citizen of the country.
All right, so, Jerry, we'll skip to clip number 11. Can you really support this with Islam? I mean, he's claiming this source, that source does. And let's just say you can find Quranic sources or Islamic traditional sources that completely go against what he's saying, and you can find Quranic sources and traditional Islamic sources that support what he's saying. That's what makes this so terribly dangerous. Remember, this man is a British citizen as well. Clip number 11.
Now, the other misunderstanding people have is they think that the original rules in Islam is peace and is no war. This is a misunderstanding. The original rules between Muslims and Kuffar is fighting and war unless they're willing to have a covenant with us. I've been ordered to fight people until they testify that there's none where they worship except Allah, Muhammad the Messenger of Allah, and they pay the salah, they pay the zakat. If they do that, then they're protected from me, their blood and their wealth, except for the right of Islam. Either they embrace the belief, the faith of Islam, so their wealth becomes protected and preserved, or they have a covenant of security with us and that will preserve it. So the fact that he was a taxi driver or civilian, as they say, is irrelevant.
Ah, there he's saying that according to Islam, it's not about peace. And if non-Muslims will pay the tax or will convert, then you don't kill them. Otherwise, blood's on their own head. This is an Islamic leader. Yes, a radical Islamic leader, but it is an Islamic leader in England who is a British citizen. There is much ground for radical Islam within the Quran and Islamic tradition. Yes, I applaud every Muslim who points to Quran and Quranic tradition and says, no, this is being misinterpreted. We stand against it. We are peaceful people. I commend their efforts to push forward and promote a peaceful Islam that does not oppress others who do not agree with their beliefs. Unfortunately, there is much support for radical Islam as well in the Quran and Islamic traditions. 866-34-TRUTH. Got a note on Facebook earlier today, and it's a new Facebook group that was launched in response to my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. I just posted on the Ask Dr. Brown page, so if you want to find out more, go there. Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. And the group basically says this: because the hands of the Christian church are stained with blood for the forced conversions, expulsions, pogroms, massacres, Holocaust, believing the lies, and for the pervasive irrationality of all anti-Semitism throughout history, we beg your forgiveness. This is Christians reaching out to Jews. We beg your forgiveness and repent. It was the hands of wicked and evil men, not the God of Israel, that did these things to you. And I wish them success and blessing as they get this message out. Matt, I'm going to send you a YouTube clip. I was just sent it for comment, haven't been able to look at it yet, but it is Stephen Sizer speaking in Iran. There was some information sent, but now there's more, and it's just quite a sight when you actually see it. So maybe there's some things if we'll be able to share with you, our listeners, today. But what's the difference between low and low? You said, I don't get it, Mike. What's the difference between low and low? You say, I'm still not getting it. All right, let's say it in Hebrew. What's the difference between Lamed Vav Vo and Lamed Aleph Vo? Well, some of you just perked up like, what? Who is this guy on radio? He's talking about Lamed Aleph and Lamed Vav, and what's he saying? Low and low. Ah, there are two Hebrew words that are pronounced the same way. There may have been a slight distinction millennia ago, but they've been pronounced the same way for a very long time. Low meaning to him, or to it, or for him, or for it, and low meaning not. And they occur in a number of places in the Bible where the main text reads one thing, and then in the margin, a scribe wrote the other. This happens in many, many different places in the Hebrew Bible. It could be that there were manuscript variations, and they were saying, okay, most texts say this, but some say this. It could be that they were saying, okay, this is what's preserved in our text, but we actually know the correct reading is this. Let's just say it would be as if you're reading a text and it has MR dot for Mr. And then one place says MISTER. And then in the margin, it has MR dot. In other words, well, it's pronounced the same way, but this is the way it should be spelled here in the text. Well, you have these variants, and sometimes it makes for very, very interesting changes of meaning. That is a tremendous, tremendous difference. And we're gonna look at a few examples. We're going to do a little Hebrew Bible study on this Wednesday edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We are going to do a little Hebrew Bible study together. And if you have any questions that relate to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we'll take your calls. 866-34-TRUTH. What's the difference between low and low? What's it got to do with the book of Job? Oh, stay tuned.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There was only a few men that betrayed the covenant of Rasulullah. But Rasulullah slaughtered all of the men. All of the men. And he took all the women and children as captive.
Yeah, he's saying Rasulullah, the messenger of Allah, Muhammad, killed all of them, even though only a few were guilty. Speaking of an event in Muhammad's day, that is a British radical Islamic leader known as Abu Bara'a. Okay, are you ready for a little Hebrew study? Can we do this together? Everybody ready? If so, nod. Just give me a nod. Okay, good, good. There are marginal readings that we have in our what are called Masoretic manuscripts, the manuscripts compiled by the medieval Jewish scholars and sages, that have alternate readings. Let's say in the synagogue you were reading a particular word, but the word was considered to be not appropriate for public reading. Then you'd have a word in the margin, read this instead. Or it could be that the main manuscripts preserved a certain tradition, but there was a marginal reading that was considered to be the better reading. That's in the margin. They occur for different reasons. It's called a kare kativ. Kare is Aramaic for read. Read this. This is what's in the margin. Kativ is what's written. It's Aramaic for what's written. That means what's written in the main text. So you have examples. I'll give you one, all right? Let's go to Psalm 100 together. Psalm 100, and okay, just getting over there, right, so I can look at it. If we look at it, say, verse, it starts off, Psalm of Thanksgiving, shout triumphantly to the Lord, all the earth, serve the Lord with gladness, come before him with joyful songs. And then verse 3, I want to read it to you in the King James, all right? Let's read it first in the King James. Know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. That's how it also reads in the New King James. It is he who has made us and not we ourselves. Do you think that's a little bit odd? He has made us and not we ourselves. Was there a concept in the ancient world 3,000 years ago that we made ourselves? No, not really. Not everyone was a fervent believer in God or a God. But the idea that we made ourselves, I mean, we don't even believe that today in our skeptical Darwinian evolutionist mindset that's so pervasive in society, that we made ourselves. Seems interesting. Now let's read most other translations. ESV, know that the Lord, he is God, it is he who made us, and we are his. NIV, and we are his. NET, and we belong to him. On and on and on. New Jewish version. We are his. Interesting. So what's the difference? It's the difference between low and low. It's the difference between low, not, that's spelled in Hebrew, lamed, aleph, and low, to him, for him, which is spelled lamed, vav, in Hebrew. In other words, the main text, the written text, says not. Hence, you try to figure this out. Hu asanu velo anachnu. He made us velo and not anachnu, we ourselves. But if you take the marginal reading that the scribes had, which is often the preferable reading or the more accurate reading, it is lamed vav, to him, for him, and that's how you'd say it in Hebrew. Hu asanu, he made us, velo anachnu, and we are his. We belong to him. So it's just a small word, but depending on how it is understood, makes a big, big difference. So now we go to Job chapter 13, Job chapter 13, verse 15, one of the most famous verses in the book of Job, and one that I looked at in great, 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 great depth before finalizing my view on it for my Job commentary. I've got about 10 more months to finish writing that. So the Hebrew, the opening word, hain, could either be though or behold. So King James understands it as though. Hain yiktaleni, even though he slay me. Though he slay me, lo ayachel, yet I will trust in him. Yet I will trust in him. Achterachai el panav ochiach, but I will maintain my own ways before him. That's the King James. Now, in this case, the King James follows the marginal reading, lo, lamed, vav, to him, for him. So, though he slay me, I will wait for him or trust in him. However, other translations read the main text, not the marginal text. So, for example, the New Jewish Version, he may well slay me, I may have no hope, yet I will argue my case before him. The problem with the reading, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, although Job in many cases expresses that no matter what happens, he is still going to trust in God. Though he slay me, yet I will trust in him. However, the second half of the verse seems to be a contrast. It doesn't make much sense, but I will maintain my own ways before him. Well, if I'm trusting in him, why is it, but I will maintain or defend my own ways before him? New King James, though he slay me, yet will I trust him, even so I will defend my own ways before him. ESV, though he slay me, I will hope in him, yet I will argue my ways to his face. No, I've read a little differently. Look, he's going to kill me. That's what he's expecting. Look, he's going to kill me. Lo, for it, ayachel, I am waiting for it. In other words, I know that if I try to challenge God, I know if I say to him that I'm defending my ways to his face, that I did not deserve this treatment, that I have been terribly mistreated by God, that I did not deserve this. You say, well, it was Satan who did it. Yeah, of course, Job doesn't know that. And in Job's monotheistic thought process, everything comes from God. Good or bad comes from God. God is in control. God's on the throne. That's what he's thinking. So I understand it as, look, he's going to kill me. Lo, for it, I am waiting. I am expecting it. But nonetheless, I'm going to defend my ways to his face. In other words, nonetheless, I still believe I'm right. And I am going to stand regardless. Anyway, a lot goes into one little word and how it's read and how it is understood. And that's one of the joys of in-depth study of the scripture. All right, friends, excuse me, a great time to take advantage of a special offer we have. If you go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, you can click on the special offer and get an entire class that I taught, 6-7 hours, called It's Time to Rock the Boat, part of Fire School of Ministry, School of Cultural Engagement, a few summers back. I believe it was between $40 and $50 to attend the class. You can download all the files for the entire class, yours to keep, for just $10. So go there and do it right now. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Explore the website while you're there. Take advantage of thousands of hours of free resources.
Change the world. It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to today's broadcast, a special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We're doing it on Wednesday this week. Hey, I've got a question for you. I've got a question. It's Ferguson-related. It's Jewish-related, all right? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I have posted something yesterday on Facebook, and it's a pretty outrageous graphic. By the way, a little graphic that we posted, an eagle that doesn't leave the nest eventually becomes a turkey. Well, I mean, not meant to be an exact point, but it's a cute image nonetheless. But, okay, let me scroll down to this. I want to talk about African-Americans and Jews, all right? It's a picture that we posted yesterday. It's reached almost 90,000 people so far, which is a good start on our Facebook page. And the caption says, "Anti-Israel protesters invade Ferguson." Now, these look to be all white faces here, okay? And their signs say, "From Ferguson to Palestine, occupation is a crime." Yeah, from Ferguson to Palestine, occupation is a crime. What's the point that's being made? Well, Palestine is being occupied by those evil, murderous Jews, those terrible Israelis, whereas Ferguson is being occupied by those terrible police, by those terrible law enforcement people or National Guard or whoever it might be. Another sign says, Ferguson and Palestine, stop apartheid now. Apartheid is misspelled in the sign, by the way. And the caption that we posted with it simply said, "You've got to be kidding me." Why? Why this kind of nonsense? Why? I mean, to me, it disqualifies both points being made. Ferguson is not being occupied by police. It's not being occupied by police. And if other law enforcement people came in or National Guard came in, it was only because of violent riots and people burning down their own community. Some were shouting, "This is justice," as they burned down their own neighborhood businesses. What insanity. And so you disqualify yourself from being taken seriously on the Ferguson end to say it's being occupied. Do you think that, look, it is not to discount the fact that there are corrupt police. It is not to discount the fact that there is police brutality. But do you honestly think that policemen are looking to invade an area and take it over as some kind of police state, and that they like being in those situations, and that they enjoy using tear gas, and they enjoy being in violent confrontations where their own lives are put on the line? You actually think that? And then you're going to say Palestine is being occupied. Well, hang on. Palestine, in recent history, if you talk about Palestine 100 years ago, and people who had the identity of being Palestinians, it was Jews living there. The Palestine Post was a Jewish publication. Palestine Orchestra was a Jewish orchestra. Palestine Post became the Jerusalem Post. But the idea that Israelis are occupying land that, number one, has been the historic possession, but number two, they acquired while being attacked in the midst of war and now are having secure borders is obscene. We'll be right back.
of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Wednesday here on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Just curious about something I'll mention in a minute, but this is really cool. I just got sent to me the transcripts of all of my presentations, teaching after teaching after teaching, Q&A, preached messages, and then a debate as well. And another debate. You got to be kidding me. All transcribed by folks at IHOP, at the International House of Prayer, when I was there in Kansas City. Plus, they transcribed my debate with Don Preston on eschatology and Romans 11, 25 to 27. Wow. I can't believe they did all that. I got to find out how they did that. Amazing work. Wow. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Some really interesting news from Israel, but just a question I want to put out to you. I know it's a broad question, and it's a generic question, and all I can get is individual responses from individuals. I'm just something just purely curious about, totally curious about. I mentioned yesterday that at some point in the Lord, I realized, and it was at some point once I was a believer, I realized that I had a special sense of solidarity with Black Christian friends and colleagues. I don't mean that I am your soul brother and I understand everything that you have lived through and see life through your eyes. No. I don't pretend to do that anymore. You pretend to have grown up in my shoes in my life. But something about worshiping with Black Christians, whether it was the passion, whether it was that sense of soul, whether it was a joint history of oppression and slavery. Yeah, I know Jews in America are, for the most part, more prosperous and successful on average than non-Jews, if you make that generalization, if that's true. But in point of fact, we have a history as Jews of being oppressed and hated. And you just look at anti-Semitism worldwide and attacks on Israel, you see that's alive today. But to this day, I love ministering in Black gospel churches. I love the liveliness. I love the response. There's a great culture of honor that they have. So I have felt somehow a joint solidarity. I wonder how much my friends, African-American Christians, feel that. I wonder how much of that unique sense of solidarity they feel towards Jews, or is it just towards Jewish believers? Mine is uniquely felt within the body, but that's also how it is in other countries. Now, I've been to Korea a dozen times, and I love Korean Christians and love to pray with them and love their dedication and prayer and their overall devotion and work ethic. But in general, with Koreans, I don't share that same sense of solidarity. It's something unique with Korean Christians. I've been to India 21 times, God willing, in a couple of weeks. We'll be back there for trip number 22 in 22 years. And there's a wonderful spiritual connection I have with Indian Christians. I don't feel it as deeply for the nation as a whole, although I have a great love for the nation as a whole, of course, as for other nations that I've been to and ministered in. But I noticed that a while back, this sense of unique solidarity that I had as a white man. And now look, let me make this clear. I lived in Pensacola, Florida for 7 years, all right? And Pensacola is kind of more lower Alabama culture than general Florida culture. It's an hour out of Mobile. It's 11 hours out of Miami if you're driving. Something like that, if I recall. So it was very different culturally for me. As a New York Jew, it was very different for me culturally living in Pensacola, although what was happening there spiritually was wonderful, was extraordinary, was beautiful, was powerful. But in terms of my own experience, it was a little different culturally. I did not feel a unique spiritual connection to redneck Christians. Just to say it like that. In other words, we're totally brothers and sisters in the Lord, and we served God together and ran our race together and had warm, wonderful fellowship. But I never felt that unusual connection that I often feel when I'm in a black gospel church. And just a certain sense of being at home. I don't know if this makes any sense to you, but I'm just wondering your perspective. Maybe you're a Jewish believer. Maybe you've experienced that. You think, Mike, what are you talking about? Maybe you're a black Christian, and you say, oh, yeah, man, I felt that towards Jews or as Jewish believers or towards Israel the whole time, or what in the world are you talking about? Just wondering. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so over to the Middle East. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was quoted in his official website that in negotiations for a nuclear agreement that the West would never be able to bring Iran to its knees. Apparently referring to the failure of Iran and six world powers on Monday to end a 12-year dispute about Iran's nuclear goals, a message on the English language account said, United States and European colonialist countries gathered and applied their entire efforts to bring the Islamic Republic to its knees, but they could not and they will not. That's how they perceive these negotiation efforts. The Iranian leader has the final say on all state matters. While world leaders have said Iran and the West have never been closer to an agreement, Israel has warned repeatedly that Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has embarked on a charm offensive to buy time to continue building nuclear warheads. Look, is Iran going to say we want nuclear warheads to launch war on Israel? We want nuclear warheads to annihilate Israel? Are they going to say that? We want nuclear warheads to advance the cause of radical Islam? Are they going to say that? The Islamic Republic denies its nuclear program is meant to build a nuclear weapon, even though the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency has revealed Iran is not abiding by the interim conditions and refusing to answer questions on the military aspects on its program. And Iran has been toughening its stance in recent weeks. Iran's chief negotiator, Abbas Araghchi, said he sees no prospect for a deal unless the other side abandons its illogical, excessive demands. On and on it goes. That's as reported in several different Israeli news sites. And according to Roll Call, former CIA chief Michael Hayden says the intelligence community can't track Iran's nuclear development. All right. Here's the story I really wanted to mention to you. Are you ready? It says Arabs prefer Israel to Palestinian Authority. The picture painted, and this is Israel Today News, the picture painted by the mainstream international media and loudmouth anti-Israel advocates is always the same. Israel is a racist and oppressive place to live for Arabs. This, so the argument goes, is particularly true following this week's government approval of the controversial Jewish state law. But if Israel is such a bad place for non-Jews to live, then why does an overwhelming majority of local Arabs prefer life under the rule of the Israeli government as opposed to the Palestinian Authority? Huh. That was the finding of a survey carried out last week by the StatNet Research Institute, which is headed by Israeli Arab statistician Youssef Maklada. So this is an Israeli Arab, Maklada. He asked fellow Arabs, under which authority do you prefer to live, Israel or the Palestinian Authority? A full 77% of respondents chose Israel. A full 77% of respondents chose Israel. This was despite the fact that most respondents said that as a minority, they experienced some degree of racism. An 81% majority said they believe Israel is trying to alter the status quo on the Temple Mount, where Jews are currently forbidden to pray, but 84% said they oppose the reactionary violence emanating from the Arab sector. So in other words, despite the fact that they did not have glowing reports, perfect scorecard for Israel, despite the fact that they believe that the rumors circulating that Israel is trying to alter the status quo on the Temple Mount, that they believe that, still, 77%, that is a massive majority, said they would rather live under Israel than under the Palestinian Authority. What's the great, great, great problem that the Palestinians face? It is poor leadership. The big problem for Palestinians is not primarily Israel or the so-called occupation. The big problem is poor leadership. 866-34-TRUTH. Ruth in Washington, D.C., stay right there. I want to chat with you on the other side of the break, a special Wednesday edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to this Thoroughly Jewish edition of the Line of Fire on a Wednesday, 866-34-TRUTH. I do wish you a blessed Thanksgiving tomorrow. Hope you have some great family time. Some of our family from Maryland just came in, our older daughter, her husband, and two kids. About midnight last night, so we got to hang out for a while before everybody turned in. So do have a blessed time. And those of you that are free to listen to radio, we'll have a broadcast coming your way, an interview with Professor Craig Keener. With that, let's go to Washington, D.C. Ruth, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, praise Jesus to you, and I apologize for my hoarse voice today, but I found it so interesting that you brought up that remarks about, you know, the different religions, how you felt that the people, somewhat of the black race, had a more close connection as far as being sincere in their worship. And I feel the same way about, I haven't had too many affiliation with Jews close up, but when I listened to you and I heard you speak, you come across to me as very sincere in the word of God and love for all people, love for God. And I get that also from Masarilla, who is also considered a Jew. But with the white pastors and preachers, very seldom I've ever got that type of feeling from them. Now, I got it from Oral Roberts, the late Oral Roberts. I don't know what race he considered himself. But I've had a lot of white people to tell me that it's something about overall the black people who are considered Christians that seem to carry a more sincere and caring love about people. And that's what I wanted to say. I share what you, I see what you are saying, and I have experienced that. So God bless you and keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, Ruth. I appreciate that, and grace on your throat there. Hey! Look, here's the point I was making. Obviously, I am, in terms of skin color, I am white. In terms of my overall ethnicity, Jewish American, as my faith, a Messianic Jew, a Jewish follower of Jesus, the Messiah. And without question, there are tens of millions of sincere white Christians and sincere black Christians and sincere Asian Christians and sincere Hispanic Christians and smaller numbers of other groups that whose ethnicity or background I didn't mention. So that we know for sure. It's just there's something that I appreciate about a passion, about a fervor. And yeah, some of it's, you know, an outward cultural thing and some of it's a tradition, but hey, you can like certain traditions more than others, right? So I prefer, look, it's one thing if I'm doing a seminary class and I'm sitting and lecturing and you got 20 people sitting around their desks taking notes and, you know, with the Hebrew Bibles open or something like that, or 10 people sitting there. But, you know, when I'm preaching, I like it where I can feel that people are taking it in. Sometimes just body language. Sometimes you just know in your heart people are drinking every word. You sense that. But other times, it's, you know, you like that outward response. People talk back to you in a good way. So anyway, but I think they're just shared histories sometimes that are important. And I said, by the way, the reason I say that is you might think, well, what's your point bringing up? My point is to try to find common ground as we look at major cultural and social issues together, to try to find common ground where we can unite together and stand for what is right. There is an article, an op-ed by Jack Engelhardt, and just posted yesterday in IsraelNationalNews.com, Campus Anti-Semitism, Where Are the Christians? The brown shirts are back on campus speaking Arabic, but where are the Christians who grew up in the land of the free? So what he's saying is this: there is a great increase on college campuses of anti-Semitism, of Jew hatred, of harsh Israel hatred. And he's wondering, where are the Christians standing up for other Jews on campus? I'm just expressing what he wrote. Yeah, we posted this on Facebook. It's a shocker. There's a man at Berkeley University, famous Berkeley, free speech Berkeley, waving an ISIS flag, the black ISIS flag, white on black ISIS flag with Islamic inscription. He's waving that, and he's spouting pro-radical Islam slogans and concepts, and people are nodding and giving him thumbs up and yes, and then he's flashing an Israeli flag, just waving, I should say, waving an Israeli flag and standing up for Israel, and people are attacking him and lambasting him and attacking Israel. I mean, it's a shocker to see. It's a shocker to see. So here's the question that's being asked. Where are the Christians? He said, there's nothing arbitrary about campus anti-Semitism sweeping the country. Rather, it is a systematic approach by fanatical Islamists to break the Jewish spirit. They come here as students, but that is only a pretext. To reason with them is pointless because their fanaticism is robotic. Their bigotry is deep-seated, and their racism and their grievances travel with them wherever they go. Jewish kids are no match. So where are the Christians who've been taught to love their neighbor, who've been raised to serve as shelters to those who suffer? Silence? Yes, you are your brother's keeper, but where are you? Your fellow students could use a helping hand. Your fellowship is urgently needed. Of Jewish students attracted to the scoffers, lighting Hanukkah candles isn't enough, and running with BDS won't protect you from their scorn. Your co-religionists in Israel count on your support. Where are you? Of Christians, more is expected of your Christianity than to decorate the Christmas tree. Here is a Jew saying, we need solidarity from Christians. Friends, one way that you can show that solidarity is by getting educated on the key issues. That's why we distributed Let the Lion Roar, so that people would understand what's happened in church history. That's where I wrote the book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, that's been continuously in print now for 22 years and translated into more languages than any book I've written. That's why I wrote it, so the church would understand the pain of the Jewish people in history, and the church would understand the complicity of the church in that Jewish pain through the centuries. Get educated, friends. Share the radio broadcast with others. If Thursday is your focus, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, encourage your friends to tune in. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Do you know how many videos we have, how many articles we have that educate, that help on these very issues? You know how many times we tell people, watch my YouTube lecture on Is Israel an Evil Occupier? So take advantage of the resources, get educated, and then stand with us. Partner with us with a one-time gift or becoming a torchbearer. If you've been blessed by the show, what a great thing to do at the end of the year. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on Donate. And while you're there, click on the special resource offer as well. My bottom line today, I believe that there is a calling from God for Jews and blacks to work together for social justice. How about we do it? Well, I know it's Wednesday, but it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday right here on the Line of Fire. Ready to dive in?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, tomorrow is Thanksgiving, so we have moved Thoroughly Jewish Thursday over to Wednesday this week, and tomorrow we'll be airing an interview I did with Professor Craig Keener. So if you've got some downtime with the family or somehow find yourself alone, we'll still keep you company on the Line of Fire. But the phone lines are open now, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7888. I know, just making sure people got it right. People got it right. A little suspense there for you. But seriously, I am going to merge together the subject of Ferguson, Missouri, and the subject of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Wednesday. I didn't do it the first hour, but I'm going to do it this hour. Many of you unable to get through yesterday to share your thoughts about Ferguson and in response to the grand jury's decision not to indict Officer Wilson and then the subsequent riots that followed. There are many who are saying that the riots in Ferguson are being stirred up by outside forces, whoever those forces are. I mean, I've heard it from communists to the government to Muslims, etc. I am terribly uncomfortable and deeply grieved when I watch some of the videos of the riots. Now, to be clear, it is to me an ugly statement to stereotype Black Americans as if, quote, Blacks are rioting in response. Well, there are some who are. There are some thugs and others who come in from other communities. Yes, it's terribly ugly and unfortunate and wrong on all counts and utterly unjustifiable for the stepfather of the deceased 18-year-old Michael Brown to be screaming, burn it down, you know, and you've got a crowd ready to burn things down. All they've heard is a verdict. They haven't heard anything in terms of why, haven't heard anything about evidence. And now next thing, burning down parts of their own community or others coming in, burning down parts of Ferguson. I mean, how that advances justice is mind-boggling. To be burning down buildings in your own community and shouting, this is justice. Now, that's madness. That's madness. To say Blacks are doing it, well, some Blacks were. There are some whites, and there are others, probably ethnic groups in there. But the vast, 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 vast majority of Black Americans nationwide were not rioting. All right? We agree on that? But you say, what's this got to do with Thoroughly Jewish Thursday? I'm getting there. I'm getting there. But there, things are being incited. I do believe that our president and Attorney General Holder are actually stirring up more racial division and racial controversy with their comments than quelling it. And yet, in the early days of the civil rights movement, there was solidarity expressed by Jewish leaders to Dr. Martin Luther King. I've got a picture about that posted on social media today with key Jewish leaders marching together. And when Dr. King preached about civil rights, he constantly quoted from the Hebrew scriptures. And President Obama, when he was quoting about immigration reform, quoted from the Hebrew scriptures as well. The call to justice is a great call from the prophets. One of the most famous messages of Dr. King quotes from Amos 5, let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. So the prophets were great champions of justice. They campaigned and spoke against, spoke against, denounced social injustice and oppression, and the rich getting rich at the expense of the poor. They addressed these kinds of things. But something's gone awry. Something has gone terribly awry. We must recover the roots of social justice today. So I've got some questions for you. You can weigh in on Ferguson and social justice on the other side of the break.
Send it, Lord.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That Middle Eastern music tells you it is thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but it's Wednesday. I know, because of Thanksgiving week, we've just readjusted our schedule. 866-34-TRUTH. I've got some very intense clips I'm going to play for you in a little while. conference in Iran, an Anglican vicar appearing there and making statements that are deplorable. We'll play those for you in a little while. Joey, we'll do that from our end here. 866-34-TRUTH. But I want to first talk about social justice, which is a great theme of the Hebrew prophets, about the fact that in the early days of the civil rights movement, Jewish rabbis and leaders marched together with men like Dr. King and others in his leadership team. And things just come a long way on every level, across the board in our society, in many negative ways since then. And my question to you is, do you believe that the comments being made now by President Obama and Attorney General Holder are helping to bring understanding, helping to bring discipline, helping to quell injustice, helping to, I should say, combat injustice and quell riots? Or are they further inciting racial division in America? 866-34-TRUTH. Let me just give you an example of some of what I'm speaking of. Eric Holder said those acts of violence, speaking of looting and vandalizing and arson, will not and cannot be condoned. And he said, it is clear, I think, that acts of violence threaten to drown out those who have legitimate voices, legitimate demonstrators. Now, Charles Krauthammer referred to those comments as astonishing. And this is the point that he made. This was on yesterday's special report with Brett Beyer. And he said, they're astonishing because Holder said the violence would not be condoned, rather than using a harsher word. In other words, to say that there's even the possibility of condoning that. Here, think of this, okay? Think of this. Let's just say white rioters came into a black neighborhood and torched a bunch of buildings and beat up a number of people, all right? And then the attorney general said, well, that is not going to be condoned. No, you don't. You don't have even the possibility, even the slightest hint of a possibility of condoning that. Who would think of condoning it? You only say it won't be condoned if there is a possibility of condoning it. Krauthammer said this. It was an astonishing statement. It was in stark contrast to the way President Obama spoke about the violence. Krauthammer said, I was watching this live, and when he said the acts of violence cannot and will not be, I'm waiting for the word tolerated. He's the Attorney General of the United States, and he uses the word condoned. Is there anybody who thinks that arson and looting ought to be condoned? I think that is an astonishing statement by an Attorney General, and the contrast with the President is very stark. Krauthammer said the Attorney General condemning the arson and looting by saying it threatens to drown out legitimate voices. That's not the reason that this is wrong. It's wrong because it's wrong. It is because it's wrong. It's an assault on other people. It's an assault on the law. Others, though, criticized you're right, Brett Baer, thanks. others criticized the President's statement for saying, look, he initially said immediately after the verdict that you know, basically, we're a nation of laws. We accept the verdict from the grand jury, but then went on to talk about the legitimate issues that exist in minority communities in America and the legitimate concerns. Was that the time to do that? In other words, if you're saying that the verdict of the grand jury was a fair verdict, you just say, we reject it, we're calling for an investigation, and let's call for riots, okay? But if you're saying it was a fair pronouncement, that what they did, we respect what the grand jury did, we respect it, and therefore we accept it, and we will not riot, we will not protest, because the law had its course, and we're a nation under law. And then maybe briefly say, I know that many say there are other issues in other cases. Those can be addressed another time. But right now we focus on this. It seemed that the greater focus was on the injustices that do exist. And many felt that that was further inflaming racial tension. I wrote back in, when was this? In August, Five Obvious Lessons from Ferguson, Missouri, then supplemented that with an article that came out yesterday. And my last point, my last of five points was that Black Americans deserve better leadership. And I said, I'm sure there are countless thousands of fine Black leaders throughout the nation, both spiritual and secular, including men and women in Ferguson. But on a national level, for each one who wants to help the cause of their people, there seem to be far more who want to exploit their cause. Does anyone really think that the future of Black America can be entrusted to Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton? It cannot be denied that the leadership of President Obama and Attorney General Holder has been racially divisive. As a white American, not only do I grieve over the racial divide that still exists in our country, but I grieve without pointing fingers at the economic disparity between white and Black America, at the number of Black young men that have served time or are serving time in our jails and prisons, and at the high percentage of aborted Black babies, just to name some of the most prominent issues. Surely this is not because of an inherent superiority of whites over Blacks, God forbid, and so I long to see the day that the deeper societal problems are effectively addressed. May God raise up new leaders for Black America, and may white Americans stand together to bring about positive change in our nation. That reflects my heart. I want to get your feedback. Yeah, it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but this does tie in with themes of social justice. Well, it's Wednesday. But we're doing Thoroughly Jewish Thursday today because of tomorrow being Thanksgiving. So these themes are related. I was interacting with someone earlier on Twitter, and I made the statement that it was racist to say, well, we knew Blacks were going to riot after the Ferguson verdict. I said, that's a stereotyping statement. That's a racist statement. And I started interacting with someone. Then I posted the picture of Dr. King and Jewish leaders. I said, marching in a civilized, in a way with dignity together. I said, that's a great model. And a Black man identified as such on Twitter basically rebuked me and said, you know, don't tell us how to, this is not your fight. Don't tell us how to do what we do. And I said, shame on you for condoning violence and looting. And I said, this is all of our battle. Social justice is all of our battle. There may be one person suffering from it more than another, one group suffering more than another, one community suffering more than another, but it's all, we're together in this. If we're followers of Jesus in particular, we got to work together for solutions. This is not just one group's problem. If it is their problem, then it's all of our problem. They help together. Anyway, he said, well, right now our focus is on police brutality, and that's the issue. I said, but that's the smaller issue. I said, that's a much smaller issue with a much bigger problem that's being ignored. So I just want to play a couple of clips for you and then take some of your calls. And I've got some shocking audio clips from Iran. Joey, we'll go to clips 12 and 13. This is a chief of police in Milwaukee, and Chief Police Flynn. And apparently there's a news conference going on. Apparently he had been texting on his, looking at his phone while interacting with others about apparent police brutality. And this is what he has to say. Clip number 12.
I was following developments with a 5-year-old little girl sitting on her dad's lap who just got shot in the head by a drive-by shooting. And if some of the people here gave a good about the victimization of people in this community by crime, I take some of their invective more seriously. The greatest racial disparity in the city of Milwaukee is getting shot and killed. Hello. 80% of my homicide victims every year are African-American. 80% of our aggravated assault victims are African-American. 80% of our shooting victims who survived their shooting are African-American. Now, they know all about the last three people that have been killed by the Milwaukee Police Department over the course of the last several years. There's not one of them can name one of the last three homicide victims we've had in this city. Now, there's room for everybody to participate in fixing this police department, and I'm not pretending we're without sin. But this community is at risk, all right. And it's not because men and women in blue risk their lives protecting it. It's at risk because we have large numbers of high-capacity, quality firearms in the hands of remorseless criminals who don't care who they shoot.
Ah, passionate comments. We're talking about social justice. And his point is this. Okay, everybody knows the names of three Black victims of Milwaukee police over the last couple of years. But he said that is a fraction of the number of blacks killed by other blacks, and you don't even know their names. If there's a larger social justice issue, if the blood of a human being is of like value, if the blood of that five-year-old is as important as the blood of someone that was killed by police, if the blood of that five-year-old killed in a drive-by shooting is as precious, where is the larger outrage? I feel that there needs to be a new generation. I'm sure the people are there. I'm sure they're there, and we just don't know a lot of their names. But may God raise up a new generation of godly black leaders for the black community that can stand together with white leaders and others of other ethnicity to work together for social justice and to confront oppression together and to confront violence and bloodshed together.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're going up there, and there's a bunch of cops processing a scene of a dead kid. And they're the ones that are going to be out there patrolling and stopping suspects that may have guns under the front seat. They're the ones that are going to take the risks of their lives to try to clean this thing up. All right? We're responsible for the things we get wrong, and we take action. We've arrested cops, we've fired cops, and so on. But the fact is that the people out here, some of them, who had the most to say are absolutely MIA when it comes to the true threats facing this community, and it gets a little tiresome, and we start getting yelled at for reading the updates of the kid that gets shot, yeah, you take it personal, okay? Now, no offense, but I'm going up there now.
And when he said going up there, that's Chief of Police Flynn in Milwaukee. He was going to the scene of a crime where a five-year-old girl had just been killed in a drive-by shooting. And he was saying, where is the outrage over the violence when you've got criminals who have all kinds of weaponry and they're killing others in cold blood and it happens to be black-on-black violence? Where are the leaders drawing attention to that? Is not that blood as precious as the blood of someone who is the victim of a police shooting? And if the police... Now, you might say, yeah, but there's going to be justice in the one case, not the other. Well, how much justice really is there? There are bigger problems we've got to work together on. I just feel that a lot of the way things are being said and presented is only provoking more division. Let's put the problems on the table. Let's risk offending each other by all means. Let's fill in each other's blind spots. Let's, you know, look, I was talking to family late last night, 866-34-TRUTH, go on the phones in a moment. I was talking to family late last night saying, look, I'm so blessed to get the perspective of a wide range of listeners. I'm so blessed that whenever we talk about an emotionally charged issue, let's say we're talking about people who've had abortion, that women who've had abortions who now know the Lord and are forgiven, they'll call in. And we're talking about people struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction, that someone will call in and that's their own story. And when we're talking about racial divide and problems in America, that we'll get calls from all sides of the issue. When we're talking about Ferguson, yesterday we were flooded with calls, so many wonderful calls from African-American listeners. And so many are bringing perspectives from their life experience that we wouldn't know, from their life background that we wouldn't know. That I grew up one way, you grew up another way, someone else grew up another way, and now we share our perspectives. It helps us, doesn't change facts, but it brings in other facts we may not be aware of. I'm just saying candidly that I feel much of what's happening today in the name of fixing and correcting and addressing injustice is actually inflaming more division and is just in a non-constructive way. And I'm praying for better leadership and for the church to do a better job of rising up and helping on a national level. All right, start in Dallas, Texas. Roger, welcome to the Line of Fire.
I just wanted to say I love your show. I listen to it every day. What I wanted to talk about was most of my Latino and black people in the hood, you know, struggling, you know, on the daily basis. Most of these people, all they know is violence, you know. You see it every day on the daily basis from your dealer in the corner selling drugs to children, you know, in the community. Yeah. I mean, it's everywhere. You know, you can't escape it. I've always said this problem is also a class thing. It has to do a lot with class, because it doesn't matter what race you are, statistically speaking, if you raised in the hood, you're not going to leave the hood, you know? Mm. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, and it's sad that it is that way. But to me, it is about class, regardless of race. I mean, I know sometimes race can be an issue, but to me, it's about class. And yep. One thing that we have to fear is the right to Second Amendment wasn't left to hunt. It was left to protect yourself. Whenever the government became corrupt, you could fight back. This country is made by rebels. I mean, we, America, the forefathers were rebels. They rebelled against England, you know? And that Second Amendment right is the only thing keeping pretty much martial law. As we see it today, you have militarized police walking the streets over there in Ferguson. You have the National Guard out there. And whenever the Boston bombings happened during the marathon, I mean, it was crazy how in such a quick moment they could strip your rights from under you. And all in the message and the thought of the Patriot Act saying your rights, it's almost like they're not even real. Like,
so what do you do though with the fact, Roger? And I want to get back to the first point before we focus on arms. I want to get back to that in a moment. But what do you do with the fact that you have a militarized crime sector, that often police are out armed, and that's why they're going down. So many are killed every year, and that, you know, in Ferguson, they didn't militarize the place until there were riots, and most of the rioters came from outside the community. The same with Boston Marathon. I mean, we've got all these freedoms. You travel around the world, and it's remarkable the freedoms we have compared with others, but when we're getting blown up by Muslim terrorists, suddenly, that could affect everybody. So, let me get back to the larger point. I mean, I said something, didn't give you an opportunity to respond, but the larger point. How do we address, as the body of Christ nationally, or as Americans generically, these issues of some people are raised in an environment that they got 2.5 strikes against them before they're 5 years old? How do we help address that on a national, larger level?
Well, I mean, to me, the way the system is made up, it's supposed to be a system for rehabilitation. When people enter the prison system, you don't leave a better person. You leave more of a criminal. You leave worse. You joined a gang because you have to survive in prison, you know? And you're taught racial segregation in the system itself, you know, in the prison system. So, I mean, it has to start at home, first of all, with parents.
Right.
But I mean, once it gets to that level, it's pretty much almost too late. It's almost impossible unless the whole system is changed. And to get the people in place, I mean, the money that's involved changed everything. Because honestly, the prison system is made up to where, you know, if it's not 80% populated, it's not making money. So they have to keep these prison systems populated so they can keep making money. I mean, it's crazy the way things are set up. It's sad.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, let me just jump in. And I've got a break here, Roger. I appreciate call, though. Yeah. Thanks for calling in. I mean, obviously, some of you are going to question the prison system has to have more prisoners in it to maintain, because, you know, many are overcrowded and other things. But for sure, while we want to bring about prison reform, however possible, and hence Chuck Colson's organizations and others that have been fighting for this for years and working towards that, by the time we're getting to prison, we're already well down the road. Somehow we have to address things in families and homes, and then with larger cultural awareness. But these are massive, very deep societal issues, the class issues, the race issues. And we as God's people need to be saying, okay, what would God have us do? What would the prophets be saying? I'm not saying they're easy solutions. I'm saying we must pursue these, not just when there's a provocation, but we must pursue them. If you want your heart stirred, go to my website right now, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on the resource offer. Watch the video there, and you'll see why your heart will get stirred as you watch.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, you want to hear some of the most recent posts. It is Wednesday, but we're doing Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on the Line of Fire. We've talked a little bit about social justice, the biblical prophets and their call for social justice, about Jewish leaders working with black civil rights leaders on the days of Martin Luther King, about, well, just the larger issues we've got to address and just be aware of. But I want to change topics and focus on Jew hatred, focus on anti-Semitism, focus on the ugly ongoing attacks based on misperceptions, based on demonization, based on exaggeration, based on outright lies. Now, social media is not going to give you scholarly analyses. Social media is going to give you a cross-section of opinions. So this is stuff that's out there. Here are recent posts either on my YouTube channel or my Facebook page or on Twitter. Oh, let's see. Here is one. There are real Jews and there are fake Jews with like 8 exclamation points. There is a real Israel and a counterfeit Israel. To support the modern day Israel is to support the destruction of the Jewish people, multiple exclamation points, and on, multiple exclamation points. They're getting set up like never before, and the enemy and enemies are laughing their heads off. They have Christians supporting their Antichrist system. The father of lies has his biggest whopper going ever, namely that Christians should stand with Israel. That was a fellow named Phil. Here's a fellow named Mohammed, I think, from Pakistan. He just posted the words, "Die, Israel." That's what he had to say. A fellow named Christopher posted this on my YouTube channel. "Always an ulterior motive with these Jews. You know how long it takes to prove to yourself that the Holocaust is an illusion? About 2 minutes if the war was 1939 to 1944. Then how come there are archived New York Times articles going back to 1869, hundreds of them, of 6 million Jews dying, suffering, bleeding, 6 million Jews dying in the Holocaust?" I'm sorry. I'm sorry to laugh after saying that, but we are supposed to believe, this person actually believes that there are articles going back to 1869, hundreds of articles speaking about 6 million Jews dying in Holocaust, plural. Until you actually look at source material, all you will see are endless Jewish lies. Wrap your head around the fact that they own all your media and your mind, dumb goyim. All right, here's another fellow named Michael. "Though I do not support the killings and condemn such acts," meaning the killings of Jewish worshipers in the synagogue several days back, "though I do not support the killings in Jerusalem and condemn such acts, it has reached a state where both Israelis and Palestinians cannot even sit and talk about peace. Palestinians are so badly impacted psychologically that some justify the killings and want to avenge. The greed of Zionist Israelis to take the land and kill thousands of Palestinians has resulted in this situation. If only Israelis had apologized for the mistake, the situation would be far better. And had Zionists not committed war crimes, many lives would be saved. And by my pointing to the horrific nature of the radical Islamic attack on these Jewish worshipers in a synagogue who were attacked with guns and meat cleavers and knives, by posting that, I am adding fuel to the fire," according to this fellow. Let's just see here. This is Sharoz, looking at the whole name, Muslim name and picture. "Ha, ha, ha. I wonder when all above people enjoy Israel bombs and Palestinians, but now everyone is feeling sorry for those who get killed. Your God is not going to save these filths because they once killed him. LOL. So here's a Muslim saying, of course, we're not going to feel sorry for these Jews who got hacked and shot and stabbed to death in cold blood in the synagogue. And in fact, my God will not save them because they killed Jesus. This is what is believed and is being posted day and night in social media, reflecting the horrible hatred of Jews that still exists worldwide today.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's a delight to be with you today. Thank you for the invitation to contribute to this important conference. Why has Israel been the subject of more United Nations resolutions than any other country in the world? And why has the United States vetoed virtually every single one of them? 60% of UN resolutions have been critical of Israel or its interests. Why is there such a close relationship between the United States and Israel? Why so much of a fascination with Israel among evangelical Christians in particular? It's important to understand that the Christian Zionist lobby is 10 times larger than the Jewish Zionist lobby.
Those were the words of Anglican Vicar Stephen Sizer speaking at the New Horizons Conference in Tehran, Iran. When you actually see the YouTube video, and it is Wednesday, but we're doing a Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast, and in a little while we'll get back to some Ferguson-related calls, so just stay steady there if you want to weigh in on that. But it's Ferguson, social justice, etc. But the context, this is Reverend Stephen Sizer, whom we have called out before, and his deplorable remarks that many have felt were even anti-Semitic, not just criticizing Israel, but going further. And you'll see how far he goes on some of these. But here's the context. When you see it on video, it's graphic is the literal word. He's sitting there with Muslim leaders. Remember, Muslim leaders in Iran have called for the extermination of Israel, the annihilation of Israel. And here is Dr. Sizer giving a speech. Oh, yes, we should be peacemakers and so on, but basically demonizing Israel. And demonizing Christians who stand with Israel, and demonizing America for standing with Israel. It doesn't even dawn on him with the UN that there could be double standards. It doesn't even dawn on him that as a Lebanese scholar, Fuad Ajami, Lebanese Arab scholar, Fuad Ajami, John Hopkins professor and social news news commentator, said many years ago, when I was at a forum in New York City in 1991, he said that Iraq uses nerve gas on its own people when it slaughtered thousands of Kurds with nerve gas, and there's no one says a word about it. Israel uses tear gas, and the whole world's in uproar over it. You think of what Israel does, the smallest thing, and next thing there's this UN, we got to do this, we got to do that, and Israel's getting condemned, and Security Council's passing some resolution. Thankfully, America will veto it time after time. This is happening repeatedly, and yet you have all the atrocities in Syria, you have atrocities in other countries. This is not even a UN discussion, hardly, in many of the cases. Let's listen to a little bit more from Stephen Sizer, again, speaking at a New Horizon conference in Tehran, Iran, a country that denies the Holocaust, its national leadership does, and a country that wants to see Israel exterminated, according to its national leadership. This is what Sizer has to say.
The political agenda of Christian Zionism is sixfold. The first element of their theology that has a political consequence is because they believe the Jews are the chosen people, they feel it is their biblical and moral responsibility to defend Israel, to lobby for Israel in Congress and the Senate and the White House. And they do that very effectively.
All right, so he I think actually makes 5 points. Let's listen a little bit more to what he has to say.
Secondly, because they believe that God gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people exclusively, you find Christian organizations campaigning for the settlement program to be expanded. And so you have Christians, the Christian Friends of Israeli Communities will link churches with settlements, funding the settlements, campaigning for the settlements, supporting the settlement program. The third element of their strategy is the belief that Jerusalem is their eternal capital. So what is their agenda there? Well, how do you get the world to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel? It's very easy. You move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Let me just hang on that last point for a minute. Every country in the world, every single country in the world, as in every, They say this is our capital city, and everybody else recognizes that. There's only one exception, Israel. Israel, many years back, said our capital is not Tel Aviv, it's Jerusalem. It's been our eternal capital. It's been our one and only capital. It's Jerusalem. Do other nations now put their embassies there? No, we're in Tel Aviv. Even America, which passed a resolution recognizing Jerusalem as the capital, no, we're still in Tel Aviv. So every other nation can say, okay, this is our capital city, and it's recognized. Washington, D.C. is our capital. It's recognized. This place called Embassy Row, that's the way it's referred to. You go down these streets in Washington, D.C., and there is the embassy for this country, that country, that country. But you go to Israel, it's in Tel Aviv, not Jerusalem. Why isn't Jerusalem recognized? Why can't that be? Isn't that a problem? Shouldn't Dr. Sizer, in the name of justice, be saying Israel should be able to set its own city as its own capital? He continues.
The fourth element of their theology is very controversial, and that is that they believe the temple, the Jewish temple, must be rebuilt before the Messiah comes.
There are Christian Zionists who believe that, and there are Christian Zionists who don't believe that. But either way, they support Israel. See, he's got this idea that Christian Zionists are all pushing a political campaign. The vast majority is just saying, we stand with Israel. We believe God's returned the Jewish people back to the land, and we stand with Israel.
Two films which I recommend, With God on Our Side, and a number of videos which I've made on Christian Zionism, which are available today, to emphasize to our Muslim and Christian brothers in the Middle East and Jewish friends that Christian Zionism is a heresy.
Unfortunately, With God on Our Side, I have labeled an anti-Semitic hit piece, and I do really hope the producers of that will put out a corrective video in the future, one that will present things in a balanced way, with all respect to those involved with the video, because we've had private, friendly dialogue. But I want to play it again. I want you to hear one part of this comment.
Two films which I recommend, With God on Our Side, and a number of videos which I've made on Christian Zionism, which are available today, to emphasize to our Muslim and Christian brothers in the Middle East and Jewish friends that Christian Zionism is a heresy.
Again, context. He is speaking at a conference in Iran, a country whose leadership wants to annihilate Israel and says that Israel is a pariah. Matt, grab me a few of the best statements. Annihilate, it's a word that's been used. The Jerusalem Day, a celebration every year in Iran, it draws massive crowds, and they chant death to Israel, as well as death to America, and burn Israeli flags. And that's the backdrop in this conference for him saying, for Dr. Sizer saying, that Christian Zionism is heresy. He has said that Christians who support Jewish control of the land are an abomination and deny the gospel. Now he says Christian Zionism is a heresy. He continues.
There is a biblical emphasis on jihad in the teaching of Jesus, a holy war, a struggle, but it is not against other peoples. It is an internal struggle. It is a spiritual struggle against evil that runs through the heart of each one of us, not through nations, not through religions.
So here in his statement, he's implying that Christian Zionism is somehow some kind of anti-Palestinian jihad. Last clip.
And that leads me to their final element, which is that their theology is very apocalyptic. It is confrontational. It is deeply skeptical of the peace process. And it is a polarized view of the world, a very pessimistic, apocalyptic view of the world. Deeply destructive. And that is, I'm suggesting to you, one of the primary reasons why U.S. politicians, European politicians, are so aligned to Israel against the interests of Iran, the Palestinians, and the wider Middle East.
Unreal. Unreal. So this is why European and American politicians are not working in the best interest of Iran because of Christian Zionism end time scheme. This is utter garbage. It is inciting hatred. It is demonizing Christians. It is further demonizing Israel and the Jews. And by the way, there are Christians who are not Zionists who have a somewhat pessimistic end-time worldview. Amillennialism is not particularly optimistic, and most amillennialists are not Zionists, or Christian Zionists, I should say, historically in particular, but certainly today, that's not a, you don't think of Christian Zionism and amillennials. There are many who hold to an end-time view that there will be cultural and society dissolution, that things will decay and explode on the earth before Jesus returns. But this is the typical polarizing work done by Dr. Sizer. Once again, I renounce the error of his words, and I say he did a deplorable thing by bringing that message at that conference.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, here, Al-Quds Day, the Jerusalem Day, July 25th, 2014. Times of Israel reports as large crowds call for death to Israel. The president of Iran said the Islamic world must in unison declare this day one of anger, hatred, unity, and resistance against Israel. Where is Dr. Sizer in Iran renouncing these comments, denouncing these comments, saying how deplorable they are? No, what does he do? He blasts Israel, he demonizes Israel, and he demonizes Christian Zionists. Shame on you, Dr. Sizer, for doing that with clerical collar as a representative of Jesus. All right, we are opening the phones a little bit wider as we go back to Ferguson, social justice, the prophets, Jews, blacks working together. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Sid, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir, please.
Okay, I wanted to speak to you regarding your statement that the president and the attorney general and Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson were instigating this situation. In the first place, the president of the United States, Barack Obama, is not a black leader. He is the president of the United States. And the second thing on that is that he has been very reticent to speak on race issues in this country for fear that he will be called a racist himself, and he has been. And I think that your words only help to amplify that right-wing message that has been put out there. And I really am, I'm disappointed in a guy like you who calls yourself a doctor and a theologian and all this, putting out this kind of message. Because
so you think I'm just doing it because I'm by? Yeah, how long have you been listening to the show, sir?
Not well, off and on.
Okay. Because I'm surprised by your comments because I've had so many black callers, so many call and agree with every word I've said, and well, I've learned so much. I've learned so much from them. And I, yes, sir, just hang on, sir. You can talk in a second, sir. That's the problem. You're not listening. You got an opinion, but you're not listening. Please listen. First, I always refer to our president. All right? But many have said, why does he immediately weigh in on Trayvon Martin? Why does he immediately weigh in on Ferguson? But he doesn't weigh in on Pastor Saeed, who's being tortured in prison in Iran. And when others are saying, Mr. President, please just stand for this issue or stand for that issue, he doesn't raise his voice. Why is that? And why does so many black Christian leaders feel the same way that I feel? I mean, I don't know where the personal attack comes, you know, a doctor, fine, it's part of my title, whatever. But I don't understand where the personal insult comes in. That's what surprises me, as if I'm just speaking here in ignorance. I'm saying there's better ways to unity. And there are many leaders, black and white, who are saying that the president has incited racial divide in that Attorney General Holder. I mean, certainly has. There's no question he has. I mean, think of the cases he's weighed in on and the other cases where he hasn't weighed in. which would have made a big, big, big difference. So why am I just being dismissed and all my other black callers and listeners are being dismissed on this, and you end up with a personal attack? That's what I don't understand.
Well, you understand it. One of the things that you're not understanding is that, number one, the issue of race in this country was not started by Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Eric Holder, or Barack Obama. And it goes back to the origination of this country, okay? And those are the people who you should have all this animus about, okay?
I don't have any animus. But I don't have any animus. But Sid, I've addressed that over and over. Sid, I constantly talk about our miserable history. I constantly say, so when were we a Christian nation? When we were doing slave trade? I brought that up scores and scores and scores of times. So you're telling me that Al Sharpton is just like Dr. King. You're telling me that Al Sharpton is just like Dr. King. I'm saying that you deserve better leadership. Well, so
that?
Do you think that Al Sharpton, do you think that Al
Sharpton,
do you think that, all right, Sid, you're getting the personal insult. I got to cut you off. I didn't say I was smart at all, but you're not listening. If you would listen, we could work together to address the very real problems that exist. But when you attack and belittle, that tells me you're not listening. If you'd listen, we could work together. I say that a man like Dr. King did a lot more good than an Al Sharpton. All right? That's what I'm saying, and that you deserve better leadership. That's what I'm saying. All right. Carl in Dallas, Texas, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I wanted to make a few points. I am an African-American. Personally, I refer to myself as black. And not African American, but either way, I am that. I am a physician, and I grew up in a very poor neighborhood. But I too, just like the last caller, take issue with several of your most recent calls.
Mm-hmm. Please,
I'll start with the fact of where you and the last caller just left off about so-called black leaders. I won't name them personally, but why is it that African Americans have to have black leaders, and why is it that others are the ones to tell us who those leaders are and who they should be? And every time one of those so-called leaders makes a misstep, then we deserve better. No other group in this country or around the world has to have such leadership. The African American community, like every other community, is a very dynamic, heterogeneous group of people. So that is my first.
All right. So let me just respond. And by the way, we may have to continue the conversation another day. If I see Carl from Dallas, I'll put you at the top of the list just because I'm at the end of the show. But just my real quick comment. First, I'm constantly talking about issues within the church. I talk about white evangelical issues, Jewish issues, equal opportunity. I talk about and where there are lacks and where there are issues. The problem is, right now, you think of major voices, whether it's for Christians, for white Christians, for Jewish people. Each group has major issues.
But
hang on. Each of us has major voices, and I'm not talking about an Al Sharpton misstep. I'm talking about a 20-year or a 30-year history or legacy. So here's the thing. So, Carl, maybe you can call back on Friday. It's Q&A on Friday, but we'll just continue this because I'm out of time, literally. But I want to hear what you have to say, and I want you to be able to defend your position. Fair enough? All right? But I'm out of time. So if you can call back Friday or next week, whatever the subject is, I'll try to switch so we can discuss this, and you can continue your point and defend it. Fair enough? All right, friends, out of time. Go to the website. Take advantage of this week's special offer. Have a blessed Thanksgiving. My bottom line, once more, at the risk of offending each other, misunderstanding each other, we need to put our cards on the table and then sit back and listen and learn. Have a blessed Thanksgiving.